99.7 FM in Accra, Love 99.5 FM in Kumasi, and on over 30 affiliates across the country. Good evening and welcome to Newsnight. Well, coming up tonight, committee formed to avert a looming power crisis races against time to come up with a roadmap to prevent the situation. More as they are expected to submit their recommendations by the close of today. Plus, President Mahama assures that the new government has the personnel capable of averting the situation.
There are a few surprises that have come up in respect of the energy sector, in respect of, you know, some aspects of governments. I think that Ghana has the human resources to be able to deal with the situation.
Also coming up on Newsnight.
The right honourable speaker will not use the term micro-minority at all in reference to the minority caucus. Today, we will not use a term that is not edifying.
Speaker of Parliament's referral of the NPP caucus as a minority, or a micro-minority, stirs controversy in Parliament. We have details of the fierce resistance by the minority who say they will not take kindly at all to that reference also tonight.
We protected you. They were conspiring. We protected you. So protect us. We are the minority. In fact, but for us, you wouldn't be the speaker. Yes, yes. It's because of our protection. That is why the president-elect had to issue a statement. Yes.
And which side of the House worked hard to retain Speaker Alban Bagbin? Is it the NPP minority or NDC majority? Details as the issue sparks intense debate on the floor as the House begins working full flight after their inauguration.
This side did not and will never conspire to do anything against you. The last group of people who undermine you, Mr. Speaker, will not be this side. We can guarantee you, you'll get our support today, you'll get our support tomorrow, because you are doing the right thing. So he must withdraw.
We're live in Parliament as a majority rejects claims of conspiracy to oust Alban Bagbin.
All of you are mongering rumors. If you conspired at all, you conspired in favor of me. That I know. You don't just conspire against. You also conspire for. Yes, so the word conspiracy is not all negative.
Also tonight, security and international relations experts downplay the possible security breaches during the Burkinabe leader Ibrahim Traore's exchange of pleasantries with President Mahama while carrying a side arm.
A foreign dignitary entering our country should be taken care of by our security. And if he decides to take care of his own security, then it is our fault.
In business, rising prices of vegetables, plantains and root tubers pushed December inflation marginally to 23.8%. That government misses out on end of year target.
And in sports, Ghana's Mohamed Kudus is set to play under 8th club coach in 5 years following the appointment of Graham Potter as new head coach of West Ham United.
And then much later, Ken, we'll take you behind the stitches of President Mahama's inauguration outfit, which carries more than just ceremonial significance, but also conveys a message woven in Adinkra symbols.
We thank you for giving us this day, a day that offers me, your humble servant, a unique opportunity to work to reset our dear country, Ghana.
That and more in tonight's edition of Newsnight. You want to join us with your thoughts, your comments, is via WhatsApp 055-1111-997. I am MFA Powell.
And I am Kenneth Jesse. Details shortly. And tonight, a new technical committee that has been swiftly formed to tackle a looming power crisis is racing against time to come up with a comprehensive roadmap to avert the situation. Now, the committee, which was formed today at the instance of the Chief of Staff, Julius Debra, is expected to come up with a roadmap by the close of today on how to prevent the situation. Now, the move follows warnings from former Deputy Power Minister John Jinapo, who attributed the potential crisis to fuel shortages. Director of System Operations at Gridco, Frank Ocho, has been providing details about the situation.
We came here because the West African Gas Pipeline Company informed about some plant maintenance activity that has to be done on the gas pipeline that runs from Nigeria and brings gas to Ghana. This, as they informed, is a critical maintenance after a certain number of hours and period of running to ensure the integrity of the pipeline. Now, this work requires that the pipeline, that the portion which sends gas to power plants in Tema will be shut down for the period. The period they need to do the maintenance is about 1 month. Now, because the gas that it is supplied to Tema plants in Tema is going to be shut down, it is needful that we get some liquid fuels for some of the plants in Tema to run so that we continue to have adequate supply even during the period of the pigging. What we came to inform the government is that, yes, there are some liquid fuels, but it's not enough to cover for the period of the pigging. And so efforts have to be made to get enough volumes of the liquid fuel so that that critical maintenance can go on as planned. So this is what we came to inform the government. Thank you.
All right, thank you very much. So I'll take it up.
You have the Director of System Operations at GRIDCO, Frank Ocho. Let's speak to our Presidential Affairs Correspondent, Maxwell Agbagba, who was present at that particular meeting with Mo. Maxwell, you were there. Who and who were in that meeting, and what were the key issues that were talked about?
Well, Ken, all the people who play crucial roles in the energy sector were present at the meeting. Now, close to 40 representatives from the Ministry of Energy, GNPC, VRA, WAPCO, Sanon, Asogi were all present. Also present were PURC boss, Dr. Ishmael Aka, Chief Executive Officer of the Independent Power Generators Ghana, Eli Flema Petobo. He was also present. GNPC boss, Joseph Dadzi, was also present. Engineer Edward E. Obinkendo, who is a Deputy Chief Executive Engineering and Operations at VRA, was also present. It was an endless list of top people in management positions in these entities who were all present there at the meeting this morning, chaired by Chief of Staff Julius Deborah. Now, Frank Ochil, who just heard, who is the Director of Systems Operations at GRIDCO, was given the opportunity to do a presentation on the situation. Now, after his presentation, member of the transition team and former minority leader, I heard him actually saying, matter in the West, that this is scary. Now, from Frank Ochil's presentation, it was revealed that the government is in urgent need of money to avert the looming power crisis caused by inadequate fuel supplies for the thermal power plant. The presentation also emphasized that the funds are critical to securing liquid fuels such as light crude oil to power the thermal plants in Tema and meet the growing demand for electricity. Now, in his presentation, he stated that this looming crisis stems from a generation, capacity shortfall that is expected when the West African Gas Pipeline Company, WAPCO, begins its pigging exercise. So right after the presentation, there was a discussion around the table on what the immediate solution should be. The Chief of Staff was willing to give the committee 3 days to finish the work, but there was a consensus and there was agreement that because this is a very crucial and important matter, they should present the roadmap and their recommendations by the close of the day today, Ken.
Right, Maxwell, and we've also been hearing from the acting spokesperson at the office of the president, Felix Kwachiofusu. What has he been telling you?
Well, he accused the Algon government of dereliction of duty in failing to procure the fuel in advance. He says the new government will rise to the occasion and avert any power crisis.
Players in the management of Ghana's energy sector, and they have up until the close of day today to put before government a roadmap on what exactly needs to be done and how it can be done. So you can rest assured that government is taking the matter seriously and will do what has to be done in order to avert any difficulty for the people of Ghana. It needs to be stressed that the pigging exercise, or if you like, the maintenance exercise on the pipeline, should have been carried out in October of last year. Government then, the MPP government, requested that they shift it to January 20th in order that they will have sufficient time to procure the alternative fuels, that is the liquid oils, to power the thermal plants within the period that gas will not be available. At least in about 2 national security briefings that the then president-elect held with the present government, he asked about the status of the procurement of oils, and he was given firm assurance by the then government that they had put mechanisms in place to resolve the situation, that there will not be the difficulty that we are talking about today. It does appear that that promise was not kept, and therefore the responsibility has shifted to the present government. But President Mahama is alive to the task, and adequate responses will be fashioned to address this particular concern. Thank you very much.
Do we get the feeling that the WAPCO would be sticking to the timeline of the January 20th, or the deferral is what you may be exploring?
Well, various options are on the table, and as I indicated, there's a committee, a technical committee, with representation from all the key players in the energy value chain that will be meeting, and they have a close of day today to present a roadmap. So all options that can be explored to first of all avert any difficulty and address the situation at hand will be put on the table, and government will make a decision based on what we receive.
Will Dumso be returning?
Well, I think that we need to wait for the work of the committee to know.
Right, Phyllis Kwachi Ofosu is the acting spokesperson at the office of the president.
Well, we'll be hearing from Maxwell Agbagba more on this, because the president, during his first day of work, has been touching on it. But you know that we've been talking about the Ablekuma North Coalition on Top Story. Let me bring back Blessed Suga, because there's a development. You, Ken, you've been following Ablekuma North for the fifth time. It's been put on hold, but there's a development. Blessed,
as we speak now, the director of training for the Electoral Commission, Dr. Sribo Kwiku, who has been addressing the press, it appears again that there will be a stalemate, and he's been breaking down the issues. We can cross over now.
To him. So it is a lady to him. So to her. Then we invited the parties, and this brought 2 of the carbonized sheets. It was not contested. We accepted because the return was not this return, because that one has also different. He said that he's comfortable that you use them. So the outstanding one, we used a telecard from the NDC to complain, because nobody contested that one. So that's the story of the Domenico Behin. But here, once the chiefs are here and the 2 of them are saying, I accept part, I don't accept part, these are my signatures, these are my handwriting, and the rest, it puts us in a very awkward position. But we cannot force anybody to come and make any claim. That one will be bad on our side.
But they almost having a rerun at Domain Kwabena.
We have not concluded anything. I've told you, even the return of say himself, he said he will not come here again. You have no idea that you're talking of.
Just a quick one, dog.
We have finished our work here for today. We are going to inform the commission what has transpired. Commission will have to engage the return officer. Based on what happens and the rest, that we know the way forward. Because the return of the himself is so frustrated. The irony of it is that he stays with the people, both the MPP and the NDC people, in their constituency. Personally, even I don't know even where it is, let alone knowing the presiding officer. So he recruited the people and trained them. So we will need him. And that's what we should all be talking to him, that he should not be out of frustration, give up. Technically, they were supposed to be 3. Return officers and 2 deputies. Have you seen any of the 2 here? You haven't. So let's ask ourselves, why are they not coming? I fear for our future elections. I fear for our future elections. But truth will always be the truth, no matter how you twist the facts.
So, no, just briefly, the journey from wherever those presiding officers are coming from to your headquarters could have been the same journey to this place where they'll be protected by the security here, but you decided to, you decided to send them to your headquarters and bus them here, which has given grounds for the allegation of you compromising them before they get. If you have the opportunity again, will you come them there and bus them?
Again. The reason is that when they come here individually, they will have to be interviewed by the police. The police don't know them, right? But when they are coming to our office there, there's no barrier, there's nothing. So they will come there, we'll pick them. All the elected officers and the rest, we all go there. Then we are given buses and escorted by the police. So if you say they should come here individually, then they will come and confront the police and whoever they will confront. Don't forget that if the person comes and the person is also attacked, it's also on us, right? So we bring them there so that under police escort, all of us can come and do our work.
So this process has been suspended now?
Did you hear the return answer? If you heard it, then I can't answer the question. Unless you are not here. Ah, okay. Then when we get it back, we'll talk to you. Thank you very much, and God bless you.
Okay, so gradually we are getting there. We have 281 polling stations in Abeokuta North. Gradually, 219, it was left with 62. And by the grace of God, truth was turned. In the first place, I appreciate the justice system that we should go and collate. And I am firm. I want to say on record that I will fight this till end because I know I won. I have all my 281 pink sheet scanned. I did it immediately before the gentleman, the Kalamu gentleman, who came and tore everything from the Electoral Commission. He tore everything from the Electoral Commission. You can witness what was going on right now. He took one pink sheet and tore it, and it was taken from him. That has been the character in the constituency. Now, what it is that gradually we are left with three polling stations. By the grace of God, I'm leading comfortably. And that is the fear.
With how many votes?
I'm leading with how many votes? The total is 414 votes. Right now, I'm leading with 300 and something votes. And so what it is that they know I have won. They are aware. The truth can never be hidden. It will definitely come out. Now, the gentleman who came, I don't know him. They also don't know him. Well, this morning, I learned some of them were calling the presiding officers not to come. And so that is what I heard. But right now, the gentleman went and came back. Now, I want to put this on record. He said, the handwriting is my handwriting. The signature is my signature. The figures are correct. But as for one rejected ballot, he can't confirm. And he remembers that there was no rejected. It doesn't exclude the truth. The truth we are looking for is the figures. If the figure is correct, which he confirmed four times, that as for the figure is correct, my handwriting is correct, the signature is my signature. But he remembers that there was no rejected ballot. That is one. Two, the other paper that was put before him from the NDC has been altered. And you can see clearly that was original pink sheet from Electoral Commission. Now, the other one from them has been altered. And you can see that they've altered the figure, leaving the guy's signature and everything. Yes, okay. So the guy said, with this original one, I did it. I can confirm. But with the rejected one, I remember there was no rejected ballot. Mm-hmm. My conclusion is that we started from 281, right? I'm still leading, and we are left with three. The three pink sheets that are left, I'm leading. Even the three pink sheets alone, I'm leading over 100. And so whatever it is, however it will be, patience reigns. We will definitely get there. And finally, Ekuya Owusu-Frie will be the MP-elect in Abeokuta North. There was so much lawlessness yesterday in our constituency. Whether Ekuya-Frie has won or not, give it to our candidate. Where from this? We are setting a bad precedent that would take generation on in a negative way. Because if 2028, we're going for election, and the NPP also gets up to say, look, this is what you did the last time. We are going to repeat or do the same thing. Do you think it will go well for us? No.
Someone put the rejected ballot number there.
No. Probably my thinking is that probably the gentleman, since he confirmed everything on the paper, probably he might have forgotten one rejected ballot. probably. That's my mind. Yes.
So colleagues, and so far, thank you very much.
And that's Ekuyefriye. And yes. Ken, I've been mentioning that you've been monitoring this coalition. Aveji is there today. And this is the fifth time we've had to suspend it.
Exactly.
I've always said that is my constituency. I can't wait to get an MP.
You still do not have.
So how many outstanding polling stations do we have to collate for us to get an
MP?
We
have just one. I think at the start of today, it was seven. They've been able to collate six. And we have one outstanding. The issues keep coming. The NDC keep raising concerns about the fact that not all the presiding officers in the last 20 polling stations accepted to the fact that those signatures that were on the papers were theirs. But I believe that the next time that this coalition exercise is resumed with just one polling station, I want to believe that they will finish the next time that they resume. But it's taking quite
hopefully
a while.
Hopefully. So three of them, we are told, additionally,
okay,
they've added another two. Mm. So we would get all that for you, at least the Joy News channel, Joy 99.7 FM. We're all over this particular collation of Ablekuma North. That's the only outstanding constituency with concerns when it comes to the election. But let's go back to our earlier story. We've been talking about energy and Doomso is looming. You've been interacting with Maxwell Agbagba on this, but we know that the president, John Dramani Mahama, has hit the ground running. He's been working today and he's raised some concerns about the situation. Listen.
For Ghana, this has been the ninth election that we have gone through successfully. There's always been anxiety anytime we're going into elections, about election disputes and all that. But as I've always said, Ghana comes true when it matters most, and we've done that successfully. The transition has taken place. It's been smooth, it's been cordial, but there are a few surprises that have come up in respect of the energy sector, in respect of, you know, some aspects of government's decisions and things over the last several years. But I think that Ghana has the human resources to be able to deal with the situation and turn things around as quickly as possible. I use the word, we need a reset. We need to reset this country and put it back on track in terms of economic stability, in terms of governance, you know, and to be able to create jobs for young people, empower women, and also eliminate poverty. So these are some of the priority things we have. And to be able to do this, we must increase investment, we must open Ghana for business again, like I said, and create an atmosphere where people see Ghana as a favorite destination for doing business. Mm-hmm. We used to top on the ease of doing business on the World Bank charts for many years.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, we have slid back a bit. Mm-hmm. I know you've changed the criteria for the ease of doing business, but I think that whatever the criteria is, we must work to make sure that Ghana becomes the favorite place for investment. Mm-hmm. I mean, when I was president the last time, we are easily attracted about $3.3 billion in foreign direct investment every year consistently for the 4 years that I was in office. In the last year, Ghana barely managed a little over $1 billion in foreign direct investment. So it shows exactly what the situation is with the crisis we're going through.
President John Dramani Mahama there on the first day of work, insisting that they have the personnel to deal with the current situation at hand. We can hear from the executive director of the Africa Center for Energy Policy, ACEP, Benjamin Bwachi. They're interacting with my colleague, Raymond Nakon, upfront as we speak.
Then bring the results. So that takes upwards 2 weeks, 2-3 weeks, sometimes 4 weeks, to be able to do that. And that means that if we don't aggressively pursue some sources, we may not be able to bring that power plant regardless of the efforts that we put forth. So those are the challenges that you do have. But I'm hoping that with the committee that sat today, there will be some contingency measures, there will be some calls to some suppliers that can quickly bring in at least HFO that can be used by some of the plants. I would discourage the use of diesel, because it tends to be expensive. It will not be recovered. Government will waste so much money in that space. So they should do what is possible. If we can't get enough, you just give timetable, we'll let people plan their lives so that we don't rack up a lot of debt with the situation that we have on our hands.
That question also, is what I'll be asking you when I come back to you, Ben. Forgive me.
And that's Ben Wachi there's interaction with Raymond Akwa on Upfront. Well, the discussion is on whether there's a looming doom. So what exactly the situation is. That committee that was put together, they have up to close of day today to give us what exactly it is they are able to do about the situation. That committee is chaired by John Jinapo, and we're expecting a particular communication from them on this. As and when we do, we'll bring that to you. We head to Parliament now.
That's true. We're going to Parliament now, where the second sitting of the House today has been fraught with controversy about which side engineered the retention of Speaker Alban Bagbin for a second term. The MPP minority, which is led by Alexander Afenyo-Markin, insists the NDC majority side conspired to remove the Speaker, but for their swift intervention.
Well, that issue came up after the Speaker described the NPP side as a micro-minority, leading to agitation on that side. Well, we can listen to what transpired shortly, but let me bring in a Parliamentary Affairs correspondent Kwe Kwasanti. We know that the term was first used by the NDC national chairman following the NPP losing several seats in the 2024 election. The caucus, we know, currently have 88 seats. Kweku, so what led to the Speaker referring to the caucus as micro-minority in the first place?
So, MP for Wale Wale, Dr. Kabiru Tiamahama, had just been on his feet and was correcting some errors in the voting proceedings. And he was being heckled by the NDC MPs, a lot of them on their feet, asking him to sit down. It was then that the Speaker of Parliament came in and said that it was his duty as Speaker of Parliament to protect, and that is when he used the word micro-minority.
Mr. Speaker, we do not have any micro-minority. Mr. Speaker, the minority caucus hereby protests. Mr. Speaker, we protest. We find this unacceptable. Mr. Speaker, we seconded, the minority seconded your proposal and the motion for your election. Mr. Speaker, when the so-called majority was even conspiring against you, we protested. We stopped them from that conspiracy. Mr. Speaker, it was us, the minority of conscience. This minority is the conscience of this house. Today, the so-called majority could not get its members to come to the house. 61 of you are upset. Mr. Speaker, we don't accept the description micro-minority. We are minority. Simpliciter. Mr. Speaker, please, kindly, Mr. Speaker, describe us as such. We are the minority. We are not micro-minority.
Right, that's the minority leader, Alexander Afenyo-Markin there. But Kweku, how did the Speaker respond?
Well, the Speaker of Parliament did come in and conceded that, of course, there is nothing in the rules that gives him the right to describe any group as a micro-minority, and that he had noted the objection of the MPP group.
I know that the term I used was not taken kindly by the minority caucus. And so I acknowledge that. And I decided that it will not be used officially. The right honorable speaker will not use the term micro-minority at all in reference to the minority caucus. Today, we will not use a term that is not edifying. So I will not use it. I will not use it. I say I won't use it. Please.
Well, so that's the speaker. Now, there's this issue also that came up during the minority leader's response about some conspiracy against the election of Alban Bagbin. Tell us more.
Yes, when Alexander Afenyo-Markin was on his seat, you heard that he saying that they don't take kindly to the speaker doing that, because not only did they second the motion to make him the speaker of the ninth parliament, but they also were the ones who stopped the NDC from conspiring to remove him from serving as speaker for the ninth parliament. But the majority side did come back quite strongly, insisting that there was no such conspiracy and that they, in fact, have had the back of the speaker from day one. Listen to Kwame Gavin Sagoja, the majority chief whip.
That I should not protect them. Is that what I'm to understand?
Speaker, we're saying that protect the minority. We are not... Mr. Speaker, you see what you are doing to us. Mr. Speaker, we protected you. We protected you. They were conspiring. We protected you. So protect us. We are the minority. We protected you. In fact, but for us, you wouldn't be the speaker. Yes. It's because of our protection. That is why the president-elect had to issue a statement. Yes.
We protect Mr. Members. Please. Let me just hear from you.
This parliament was to elect you as Mr. Speaker. You said that on political platform. Today, a 10-quote minority leader is now pretending he loves you more than the people who actually you belong to. We can tell you this. Mr. Speaker, and I know you've got and the videos. But what I would say is that for the fact that he described us as conspiring against you, he must actually withdraw that part of the statement now and apologize to us. And Mr. Speaker, he described us as the so-called majority. Look at you this way, and look at this. Is this a so-called majority? Do you describe this as a so-called majority? This is a proper majority. And this is, Mr. Speaker, the size of this, let me repeat, the size of this looks like my district assembly.
Well, interesting development there in Parliament. But Kweku, how did the Speaker himself respond to the accusations of conspiracy?
Well, the Speaker, according to him, said that he knew there was a conspiracy. But that conspiracy was a positive conspiracy, that it is not true that the NDC MPs had been conspiring not to make him the Speaker of the Nine Parliament. And that even if there was a conspiracy, it was a positive one for him.
At that time, the head of state was General Ignatius Kutu Achampong. He said, "Are for rumors." He has no problem with rumors. The problem he has is the mongering of the rumors. Now, why? Is it one person mongering the rumors? All of you are mongering rumors. And so a decree was passed against rumor mongering. We are not going to do that in democratic Ghana. And so as you monger your rumors, be sure that the right honorable speaker will take them with a pinch of salt. That is why I started by saying the testing of the waters is enough. We have all tested the waters, the majority, the minority, and the speaker. And that is enough. Honorable member, I just use a phrase, and that phrase was explicit enough. If you conspired at all, you conspired in favor of me. That I know. You don't just conspire against, you also conspire for. Yes, so the word conspiracy is not all negative.
Apart from the controversy surrounding the use of the word micro-minority, what else was on the floor today?
Well, the House is currently on suspension. They were expected to return a little around 6, but they haven't returned. They have to constitute the appointment committee and the business committee, the appointment committee in particular, in anticipation of John Dramani Mahama's ministerial nominees and other appointments that he will be making that will require parliamentary approval. So the House is currently on break for the leadership to confer with the Speaker on the selection committee and then constitute the appointment committee, secondly, and also do the business committee in anticipation of all these appointments that will come to Parliament.
Sante is our parliamentary affairs correspondent there. It's now time for business, and George Riafe is here with the latest.
Well, coming up in business, rising prices of vegetables, plantain and root tubers put December inflation marginally to 23.8% as government missed out on the end of year target. And we'll also hear from business groups about their expectations of the new administration that is President John Mahama formally assumes office today. The Business News on Newsnight is brought to you by MTN Business. Welcome to the new world of business. Kingdom Books and Stationery, your number one stop shop for all your office essentials, Pepsodent and Synthes tanks. You're welcome back to Business on Newsnight. Now, rising prices of some food items pushed December 2024 inflation up marginally to hit 23.8%. Now, this represents a marginal increase from the 23% that recorded for November last year. There is more in this report.
Some analysts that inflation rate for the month of December will slow to the new levels. This was due to the fact that December should be benefiting from the harvest season earlier this year. However, that is not the case in this situation. Data from the Ghana Statistical Service showed that December inflation went up marginally from 23% in November to 23.8%. The increase was influenced by a rise in price of some food items like vegetables, plantain, and root tubers. However, if you track inflation from November to December 2024, the rate of increase slowed from 3.8% to 2.8%. The data also showed that whilst import inflation was reducing ending December, the same cannot be said about local inflation, which went up from 24.5% to 26.4%. In January last year, inflation stood at 23.5% and ending 2024 with a rate of 23.8%. At the regional level, Upper East had the highest inflation rate of 40.6%. Government is missing its end-of-year inflation target after it revised it on three occasions. First, it was looking at ending the year at 15%, later revised to 17%, and then 20%.
And that is a business desk report. Meanwhile, the Ghana Statistical Service says it's raising concerns about the lack of efforts in addressing challenges affecting food production. Professor Samuel Kobnini is government statistician.
We do emphasize that there are two perspectives in addressing inflation. One is the monetary side, which the conversation on exchange rates comes to the table, and the other is the real side. With what we've seen with food inflation, more particularly the food that we consume that are locally produced, we really need to try and address inflation, at least from a complementary point of view, if we don't want to put emphasis on the real sector, in this case, identifying the food items with significant weights that are driving food inflation. So in as much as exchange rate stability indirectly, and here we are underscoring the fact that indirectly would inform inflation rate, it is proper we consider the real sector issues, i.e. the production issues, i.e. the value chain issues, as you rightly said, the transportation, the warehousing, the reduction of the post-harvest losses, to ensure that we don't see huge variations between wholesale prices and consumer prices. So that is it when it comes to the policies to drive down rate of inflation and the potential impact of the stability of the exchange rate on inflation.
Professor Samuel Kobnini is a government statistician. And let's still stay on this story because it is one of the major priorities of the Bank of Ghana to reduce inflation to its low level. So why did they miss out on the end of year target? Let's hear from the governor of the Bank of Ghana, Dr. Ernest Addis, who has been given some reasons. He spoke to Joy Business in an earlier interview.
We are ending the year around 23%. Which is about where we started from. Now, there are several reasons for that. As you know, 2024 is an election year, and a lot of the developments during the year were influenced by sentiments, right? So you see that during the year, we had fairly difficult time controlling the exchange rate. In the first quarter of the year, the cedi depreciated quite significantly, partly because we also had very ambitious reserve accumulation targets under the IMF program. So the central bank did not have enough room to maneuver in the first half of the year in terms of its ability to support the currency. This changed significantly towards the end of the year. Now, given what happened in the earlier part of the year, it is no surprise that we were not able to see as much improvement in the disinflation process as we would have seen if we didn't have problems with the exchange rate. Because there's a significant pass-through. As soon as you get a lot of exchange rate depreciation, that automatically translates into the changes in the price level.
And that is the governor of the Bank of Ghana, Dr. Ernest Addison, speaking to Joy Business in an earlier interview. Now, businesses are outlining the expectation for President John Mahama as he formally begins work today. Now, key among their requests is reviewing the tax structure and also working to stabilize the Ghana city. Dr. Humphrey Iyimdake, President of the Association of Ghana Industries.
So there are a number of tax reforms that I believe we need to really look at. Secondly, initiative for exchange, the exchange rate, the dollarization of our system. I'm just, I'd ask a question about the, what is the policy initiative around our remittance law? We know what the Filipinos do, countries do regarding exporting of their talent and labor, and they have clear remittance policies regarding that. In the flip side, you drive tourism as another means of creating revenue through your Forex. So in the short term, in the first quarter, assuming you anticipate a $10 billion shortfall, can you design a policy regarding tourism and your remittance policy to presumably give you a $4 billion and then also target your export company? Once you go by starting, it takes time. They'll go through their correction period before you say, Jack, either you're getting out of power or the situation is worse. Target existing export companies. Give them some intervention to drive export. Automatically, that will bring in some money. And there are other initiatives. So we're looking out for innovations and initiatives around the exchange rate, how to manage the exchange rate as another option.
President of the Association of Ghana Industries, Dr. Humphrey Iyimdake. In a related development, former Minister of Finance Atekpe is insisting that reviewing these taxes would not affect the revenue targets for this year.
The 20-plus levies that we have are not generating more than 5% of tax revenue. Secondly, many of those taxes we are talking about today, many of those taxes we are talking about, like levies, all those cumulative taxes, many of them were actually subsumed into the value-added tax. Right. Now, we are going to enhance compliance when we facilitate as quickly as possible the ITAS, that's the domestic element. Why are we able to enhance compliance? It is because the VAT you paid at the port will straight away go into the domestic tax system. It will make the tax system more efficient, and we are going to be doing other things like the ITAS, which is why it's a condition.
And that will make up for these
that
are taken up for.
And even, yes.
And that's the former Minister of Finance, Seth Tekpe, talking about the fact that government decision to scrap some levies and taxes will not affect revenue badly for this year. And that's all for business on News Night. Back to you, Kenneth.
Thank you very much, George. Sports news is next.
Yeah, Kenneth, well, some quick updates relating to Ghana's Mohamed Kudus and his side. West Ham United are set to appoint former Chelsea manager Graham Potter as the club's new head coach. This is according to reports in England. Now, we understand that the manager will sign some two-year contract with the Hammers, keeping him at the club until 2027. Now, if confirmed, Graham Potter will become the third manager to coach Ghanaian star Mohamed Kudus within 2 years at West Ham. The former Brighton and Hove Albion manager will replace Spanish coach Julian Lopetegui, who has been sacked by West Ham after nearly a year in charge. Now, Lopetegui joined the Hammers in 2024, signing a two-year contract to replace David Moyes after his deal expired at the end of the 2023-24 season. Now, the Spanish coach, having been in charge of West Ham United, is leaving them in the 14th position, having amassed just some 23 points. A very difficult time he's had this season at West Ham United. And look at his record. He managed just some 6 wins, 5 draws, and 9 defeats in 20 Premier League matches. So Mohamed Kudus set to be coached by Graham Potter there. Welcome to matters relating to the Black Queens, and following the GFA's inability to tie down Nora Hoptel as Black Queens coach, that has raised questions about Ghana's commitment to the women's game. Now, the Swiss refused to extend a contract after it expired last month, and has now been appointed as the head coach of the Zambia women's national team. Former sports minister Ikua Sena Dansua believes she did not get the necessary support from the authorities.
Yeah, it's a shame. And it may boil down to interference in her work, one. Then maybe lack of resources. You know, when you compare female football to male football, you can see that almost 90% of the resources allocated to football are channeled into the national teams, national male teams. So maybe she wasn't happy doing her work. She wasn't enjoying patronage and support from the political leadership of Ghana. And that is why she decided to go that way.
So that's former sports minister Ikua Sena Dansua there speaking earlier to City Sports in an interview. Kenneth, that's it we have for you. But big game coming up 8 p.m. tonight is the second semi-final game of the Carabao Cup between Liverpool and Tottenham Hotspur happening at the Anfield. So following the disappointment against Manchester United, they'll be hoping to bounce back against Spurs.
I hope both of them lose, by the way. Thank you very much. I don't have a team as it stands now.
How can two teams lose, though?
They are both enemies of mine. Thank you very much for bringing us sports, Razak. Let's talk more stories tonight as security and international relations experts are downplaying the possible security breaches following the move by Burkina Bay leader Ibrahim Traore to exchange pleasantries with President Mahama while carrying a sidearm. There have been mixed public reactions over why the Burkina Bay leader was allowed to breach security protocols in another sovereign state. Special aide to President Mahama, Joyce Bauer, said Mr. Traore has gone or had gone through all the necessary security checks and was not going to harm anybody.
And before they actually even arrived at the premises, remember that there were various security checks. Mm. This is a whole head of state, you understand. And you know this is also a country with a very delicate history currently. Mm. And so there's all sorts of things at play. If there's anybody who can get him to actually even rescind his decision to continue being a military leader. And Ghana has had his own history. Mm. Jerry Rawlings himself came in almost pretty much. And I hear this is a man who references late President Rawlings all the time and literally idolizes him and has photos of him all over. If we want a way in which we can encourage him, for example, to go back to democratic, I'm sure that this may be a great way, that you can still go to the polls and lead your country with whatever flair and pomp and pageantry you want to do. But yes, I also found it a bit awkward when I saw that he had the gun on his hip and all of that.
So that's Joyce Bauer Mukhtari there interacting with my colleague Sweety Abochi on the AM show today. Well, we can hear from Dean and Director of Academic Affairs of the Ghana Armed Forces Command and Staff College, Dr. Vladimir Inchidan. So he says Ghana's security should rather be blamed for any cited breaches.
Well, it is us who breached a security protocol, because a foreign dignitary entering our country should be taken care of by our security. And if he decides to take care of his own security, then it is our fault. So in any case, I wouldn't fault him. That is part of his dressing. It is part of his accoutrement. It is part of his way of life in his own country. And so he's always with his sidearm. And as soon as he entered the country, Ghanaian security should take security of the guest. And if we allowed him to carry it along, then it is our fault. We can't blame him for breaching anything. It is the fault of our security, because the security of our guest is our security, and we should have taken care of him by taking his gun out, keep it until he was going away and giving it back to him. We needed to do this. This is not the first time such a situation has happened. I remember a situation with Gaddafi, and our security made it clear to Gaddafi and his entourage that we'll take care of his security, so they should hand over their arms. And they did. So it's unfortunate I'm hearing this story, and we don't have to blame him for anything. He hasn't offended Ghana in any way. That's how he dresses. That's how he takes care of his own personal security, and we should have taken the measures.
Right, and still on the inauguration, MFA, John Mahama is taking over as president of Ghana, continuing the long-standing tradition where president-elects wear traditional attire at the inauguration.
But this time, Ken, his outfit carries more than just ceremonial significance. It conveys a message woven in Adinkra symbols. Well, my colleague Emmanuel Jivenu explores the meaning behind these symbols to reinforce his inaugural address to the nation.
His agbada carries a message woven in Adinkra symbols.
Beyond the fabric, however, lies a deeper narrative, a silent sermon conveyed through the four Adinkra motives, Jinyami, which means accept God. This motive proclaims a reflection of President Mahama's acknowledgement of divine providence in his return to the presidency after 8 years.
We thank you for giving us this day, a day that offers me, your humble servant, a unique opportunity to work to reset our dear country, Ghana.
The Sankofa is perhaps the most popular Adinkra symbol, representing redemption, renewal, and a nation ready to correct its course. Mahama's campaign slogan echoed these ethos.
Today should mark the beginning of a new opportunity, an opportunity for us to make a difference in our governance and our economic management. We shall reset our dear nation, Ghana.
The intricate design of the Jinimin symbolizing strength, tempered by humility. Mahama's journey is a proof to this. Once a president, then an opposition leader, and now returning with an air of introspection.
As your next leader, I'll have the humility and presence of mind to take responsibility for any challenges.
Nyamidia reinforces his promise of leadership rooted in faith and a vision of unity and progress.
We are poised to embark on a journey of progress and inclusivity, united in our vision for a more prosperous Ghana.
As President John Dramani Mahama leads Ghana into a new chapter, he does so with a clear vision, one of resetting Ghana, building a brighter future together, and relying on the values that have shaped the nation for generations. Emmanuel Jivenu, Joy News, Accra.
I didn't say one of the Adinkra symbols well.
Yes.
Forgive me. I'm from the Volta region. The person that did the report is also from the Volta region.
Yeah.
But we are told it's Jenimin.
Jenimin.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. I'll give you one in the Ever language and see if you can mention it too.
Please do.
No.
Well, away from the inauguration of President Mahama at the Blaster Square, let's take you to that one that happened in Parliament, because that was not just a political milestone. It became a showcase of a tradition and style. I mean, from the bold kente to daring corsets, MPs turned the house into a fashion runway.
Well, Sayama Bladi Souza has more in this report.
The inauguration of the 9th Parliament of the 4th Republic of Ghana wasn't just about a new chapter for parliamentary business, but it turned into a runway where tradition and style and fashion took dominance. Kente, agbada, smock, kaftan, among others, were in display in each corner of the August House. For some MPs, their fashion statement on this night will be louder than any parliamentary debate. Patricia Piaggi, the MP for Asokwa, turned heads and possibly caught her own breath in a daring kaba which offered her nothing but restricted comfort. Clearly fashioned for breathlessness, her corset top design, bearded in blue, gold, red and black, can be described as a tribute to Ghanaian creativity. Komfodo Kujokansa, MP for Ada, was draped in a timeless black and white kente. She skipped the corset craze, embraced what millennials might call hipping. Her graceful interpretation of tradition offered both poise and comfort. Then there was Mavis Nkansa Boadu, MP for Afia Central East in kente. Her look was both commanding and celebratory, a vibrant nod to her roots. In a striking red dominant kente, covered with a red net on top, Gloria Owusu, MP for Trobo, seemed ready for a battle, or at least to make a victory statement loud and clear. With her slit and cover, the fiery red was as bold as her fierce political journey, underscoring her message, the fight isn't over, as dispute about her electoral victory remains in court. The MP for Jomoro, Dorcas Afotofi, opted for a figure-fitting flattering choice, both back and front. For the men, our number 3, Speaker Alban Babin, renowned for aligning outfit with parliamentary occasions and mood, opted for a surprisingly plain suit and tie. While practical for Robin, the absence of his usual flair felt like a missed opportunity. Standing out among the men was Sam George, MP for Nungo Pram Pram, draped in a rich traditional kente cloth. His choice displayed cultural pride, breaking the monotony of the otherwise predictable sea of suits, smocks, and kaftan. The rest of the male MPs played it safe, dressed in their versions of fashion. The light of tailored suits, ties, and modern smocks filled the room, leaving the spotlight firmly on the bolder choices of their female counterparts. In the end, the night wasn't just about swearing